In Matthew 4, we hear about this. It says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew, and they were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me. Walk this way, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once, they left their nets and they followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called to them, and immediately they left the boat and their father, and they followed him. Walk this way. Come follow me. This was the beginning of Jesus' invitation for them to walk his way. When we read this passage, it appears that the disciples didn't even pause to ask, like, follow you where? Or follow you how? They jumped out of their boats and they started walking his way. If we read deeper into commentaries or other books, we know that they'd heard about Jesus, they'd maybe been around Jesus. So it wasn't jumping out blindly, but they didn't stop to ask questions. They jumped out. If you have decided to say yes to Jesus' call to follow me, do you remember if you asked Jesus, follow you where? Or follow you how? Did you have a sense of what it meant for you to walk in the ways of Jesus? My very first memories of Jesus calling me were when I'm a very young child, I mean, under the age of 6. And the place I was learning about Jesus was through a vacation Bible school that was held on the beach at Sabo Beach. I wasn't learning yet about faith at home. We weren't attending church regularly. And I loved this Jesus that these people talked about. I clearly remember hearing Jesus' invitation, come right to me. I heard his voice when he invited me to come near to him. And in that invitation, what I recall Jesus saying was that as I would come to him, that he would love me and that he would care for me. He would be there for me. And so I would say in my initial calling of come follow me, what Jesus did was he drew me in with his love. I believe that Jesus' call in my life at that point was from the words in John 15:4 that said, abide in me, Catherine, and I will abide in you. And tucked into this calling of abide in me is Jesus' call to stay constant in our relationship to him, to stay close. From my early years of faith, staying close to Jesus really meant staying close to the one who loved me, who cared for me, and was a very safe shelter during those early years of development. Jesus' plan for his disciples is for transformation. And so I wasn't invited just to stay in the safe refuge, a safe shelter that Jesus offered early on. This transformation kept coming in my life and in our lives as we listen to his teachings, or we walk in his ways, or we experience his presence and his power. And so as I grew up in my years and in my faith in Jesus, Jesus added to this invitation to abide in him. He invited me to come and to follow, to walk this way. And in that season of my life, kind of youth into my mid-20s, walking with Jesus meant working at a camp that had a high emphasis on evangelism. It meant lots of involvement at church. And it eventually meant going to Bible college, where I became a student of the scriptures on a different level, on a deeper level. If you became a follower of Christ early in your life, it is likely that Jesus has invited you further into his journey over your lifetime. Can you think of times where Jesus has re-invited you to come follow me? Where Jesus was inviting you to walk into this invitation. Let's head back to the disciples, the first disciples. The word disciple appears at least 230 times in the Gospels. And as Steve said last week, the term disciple wasn't just unique for the New Testament. Many people in ancient world considered themselves to be disciples or disciplers. So the great philosophers of Greece often referred to their pupils or their learners as disciples. And in its most basic sense, the word disciple simply means a learner or one who is being taught. By the New Testament times, the term disciple described one who is not just being a learner, but also one who devoted themselves to a particular person or a culture or a religion. Being a disciple meant someone who followed or who imitated the life and teaching of a great master. Discipleship was a process of learning from and becoming like that master. The word follower in the Greek describes someone who seeks to be like his or her teacher, a companion who is going the same way. Whenever people chose to follow a particular teacher, they often left their jobs and current way of life to do the following, to follow after the one who called them. For some, following their master as a disciple had to be quite literal. So the 12 disciples that we read about in the Gospels, they literally followed Jesus throughout Israel. So to be a disciple of Jesus is to be a learner, an imitator, a follower. It is a process where we are seeking to become more like our master. Last week when Steve introduced us to being a disciple of Christ, he used the following phrase to describe a disciple. It said, to powder ourselves in the dust of their feet. So we were that close to the one that we're following that their dust came upon us. And as Steve said, that this has become a blessing that people use now. May you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. So in preparing for today's message, I decided to read through the Gospel of Matthew to see where the disciples were going, what they were seeing, what they were hearing, and what they were being taught as they were close enough to Jesus to be covered in the dust from the roads that he was walking, or to be covered in the dust from the ground that he invited them to sit on. When Jesus said to the disciples, come follow me, come walk this way, this is where he took those disciples. Are you ready? First of all, he taught them the Beatitudes on a mountainside. Then he told them that they were the salt of the earth and that they were the light of the world and that they were to let their light shine. And early on in his messages, his teaching to them, he said, do not worry. If you're going to imitate me, do not worry. He invited them to put into practice his words. Matthew 7:24 says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise person who built a house on the rock. So when we put his words into practice, we are building firm and solid foundations in our life. While following closely to Jesus, they met a man with leprosy, a person with a high fever, a person with a disability, a demon-possessed person. They watched closely as Jesus healed each of these people. When they were terrified that they were drowning, they were close enough to him to see him calm the storm. While they were learning from him, a man whose daughter had died knelt beside him. In Matthew it says, while he was saying this, a synagogue leader came and knelt before him and said, my daughter has just died, but come and put your hand on her and she will live. Jesus got up and went with him, and so did his disciples. Walk this way. On their way to a child who had died, they were interrupted by a woman who was bleeding. Jesus healed both the child and the bleeding woman in their presence. They were covered in the dust of healing. And then as they continued to walk with Jesus, two blind men called out, and a man who was demon-possessed came to them, and they continued to follow Jesus. Matthew 9:35 reads, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching, preaching, healing every sickness and disease, and they walked with him. While they walked where Jesus walked, they saw him as he had compassion on crowds. As they walked with him along the way, Jesus would stop to teach them. In Matthew 10, Jesus blesses his disciples with his authority. He further equips them to walk his way. Matthew 10 says, Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every sickness and disease. We as disciples are given Jesus' authority. And I believe these men need to be named because we're not even halfway through Matthew. They're still on this journey of following him. And so in Matthew 10, their names are listed. It says, these are the name of the 12 apostles. They were disciples first. Simon and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. These were the 12 that we read about following closely to Jesus. And when Jesus gave them authority, he then sent them out. In Matthew, it says, these 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, proclaim the message. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Heal the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse those who have leprosy. Drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. And as he sent them, Jesus didn't hold back in telling them what was coming to them as he followed his ways. He sent them out like sheep like wolves, noting that they would be flogged. He said to them, you'll be arrested, but don't worry. Men will hate you. But don't worry. Stand firm. Don't be afraid, my disciples. You are worth more than sparrows. The disciples were close enough to Jesus to ask him their questions. In Matthew 13:10, the disciples ask, why do you speak in parables? We don't understand all these words. They asked, why couldn't we drive out the evil spirit? They asked him, who is going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? They asked him, how many times do I have to forgive? And they asked, who then can be saved? This message is hard. As they walked the way of Jesus, they were invited to participate in miracles. In Matthew 14:15, he said to them in front of a crowd of 5,000, you give them something to eat. And 5,000 people were fed. And again, in Matthew 15, he says, you feed this crowd of 4,000. As we read through Matthew, we can picture the disciples covered in dust, amazed at the crowds of people that gathered and at the miracles that Jesus performed. Yet I also believe that they were truly tired and absolutely covered in dust. And as they were covered in his dust, Jesus taught them further what it meant for them to imitate him, to walk in his ways. In Matthew 16, it says, then Jesus says to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it. And he continued teaching them how important faith was. He said to them, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. And we continue on as they were walking, covered in his dust. And he taught them lessons, saying the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, And whoever wants to be great must become a servant. And we keep going. We see also at times the disciples that they got it wrong. Even though they were in very close proximity to Jesus, they didn't fully understand his ways. In chapter 19, the disciples rebuked the parents who were bringing their little ones to Jesus, saying, "Don't bring them here. Go away." And Jesus said to them, "Let them come." And he held them in his hands, and he touched them, and he blessed them. And in seeking to be close enough to Jesus to have his dust come upon them, these disciples experienced grief. They experienced confusion. They experienced denial. And yet they also experienced great joy. And if we jump ahead to the Gospel of Luke, we read in Luke 10:1 that Jesus appointed 72 others to go ahead of him. And then in 16 verses later, it says they returned to him with joy. And their joy was what they had experienced when they had walked in his way. We see that for the early disciples, it wasn't easy or it wasn't simple to be a follower of Jesus. For these disciples to follow Jesus, they have to demonstrate a willingness to allow their identity, their status, and their worth to primarily be determined in relationship to him. In that quick scan of the Gospel of Matthew, we read of the people and of the situations that Jesus invited his disciples to follow him to and to learn from him. And after reading the book of Matthew with a pen in hand, noting all of these different things that the disciples saw as they were walking closely, I was really tired. I thought, wow, that was a lot of traveling on foot. That was a lot of people. That was a lot of learning. And it certainly was a lot for them and for myself and for us as disciples to digest. And with this tiredness on my mind, I realized that I was making discipleship of Jesus more of a task than of a following. More of a, oh man, they had to keep on going, then wow, what was ahead of them? What am I going to see when I walk this way with Jesus? But when I moved away from this feeling of tiredness, when I kind of moved out and got a bigger view again, and I looked more closely at Jesus, at this teacher who was inviting them to be like him, I thought, oh, wouldn't it have been beautiful to be covered in his dust? Can you imagine what it would have been like to be so close to the healings and to the healer? To witness a child come back to life. To be present to the parent's joy. To see these small portions of bread and fish grow until 5,000 people were fed and there were leftovers. To watch as outcasts became welcomed back into the community. To sit beside and to receive Jesus' love, his compassion, and his deep belief in your ability to join him in bringing healing and new life. That doesn't make me tired. That makes me want to follow. Author Alan Roxborough says, "Being missional means we join this heritage, entering a journey without any road maps to discover what God is up to in our neighborhoods and communities. We get to see that the Spirit is always shaping something far greater than we can imagine." And as the disciples walked in the way of Jesus, they had front row seats to things far beyond what they ever could have imagined when they left their boats and their occupations and their families and their communities to learn to imitate Jesus. Many of us here this morning identify as disciples of Jesus. And as we join in the journey of the first disciples, we can join in the potential thoughts and the questions that they might have. Author Greg Orden says, "Much of Jesus' teachings happened on a conversational level. He stimulated people's thinking with questions, with stories, parables, and analogies, and he led them to the truth without spoon-feeding it to them. Jesus allowed the disciples to live with conundrums. No easy answers were provided, nor were there fill-in-the-blank workbooks. He wanted disciples who would have to think through the issues. Included in discipleship is the discipleship of the mind. They were invited to follow Jesus in the way that he walked, in the way that he thought. And along the way, they did have questions for their master. And I wonder this morning, what questions do you have for Jesus in this season of being his disciple? What questions are you asking Jesus? Along the way, the disciples didn't always believe that Jesus would provide. But seeing the miracles encouraged them. What miracles are encouraging you these days? The disciples got tired. And when they were tired, again, they had to wonder with this, is this a task or a calling to follow Jesus? And so we can wonder within ourselves, how is my enthusiasm in being a disciple of Jesus in this season of my life? If it feels more like a task, is it a season for us to imitate Jesus in the times that he pulled back and when he pulled aside to be still and to be refreshed with his Father? For those who have said yes to following Jesus, do you know where Jesus is beckoning you to follow him today? In Jesus calling us to follow him, to walk like him, Jesus is also calling us into action. And author Preston Sprinkle writes, "We must do the work that Jesus calls his disciples to do. Learning without doing is not really learning. We learn by doing, not just by learning alone. When Jesus said, 'Come follow me,' he wasn't heading to Sunday school. He was on his way to heal the sick, to befriend the tax collector, to stand up for the adulteress, and proclaim good news to the poor. But the beautiful thing is that Jesus didn't call the early disciples, and he doesn't call us, to do this alone, or to do this until we are exhausted." Author Greg Orden notes, "When Jesus called his disciples, he called them into a communal relationship. Jesus didn't select 12 men and disciple them on their own, one-on-one with no connection to each other. Rather, he enlisted them as a community of world changers. He came to form a community of followers who would carry on his mission to the ends of the earth. We are invited to join with each other to go to the places that Jesus invites us to walk to." In writing this message, one of the questions that kept crossing my mind was, "Catherine, where have you recently seen a disciple covered in the dust of Jesus?" I honestly quickly thought of Josh and Jill. I find it very beautiful that they are foster parents at this time. And I bless you as you do that. Thank you for modeling. And I was also drawn to the testimony of James Kelly, who is the founder of Faith Tech. Faith Tech is pioneering a new way to share the good news of Jesus in a new era driven by technology. And it says that they exist to bridge the gap between faith and technology. A description of what Faith Tech is says, "Faith Tech began to bring Christians with a heart for Jesus and a mind for technology to facilitate kingdom-minded collaboration with tangible results, to begin bridging the gap between faith and technology." I think of James as a young man in today's society who is choosing to walk like Jesus. God has given James a community to lead. He has given him scripture to follow. And James is saying, "As I walk like Jesus, I invite you to walk like him too." So I'm going to let James, through a video, share with us what it meant for him to walk closely to Jesus, and also to hear about the recent day miracle that happened because James and others chose to walk like Jesus did to the places Jesus called them. And Jonathan's going to play the video, and we're going to listen to one section, and then he's going to move forward to another section.
And then we did a hackathon. Now, if you don't know what a hackathon is, it's one of the coolest things on earth. It's like a retreat for geeks. For our hackathons, you take a really big problem, and in one very short amount of time, you have to come up with a solution, pitch it to a panel of judges, and we award winners. And some of the most crazy things started happening. I had found out weeks before this hackathon that here in Canada, more than 8,000 people a month were going on Google, searching the phrase, how to kill yourself. And the top search result was 7 easy, painless ways to kill yourself that showed you how to do it. So I stand in front of everyone, I'm like, this is one of the most insane things I've ever heard of, but I have no idea what to do about it. So this team gets together. They buy the domain howtokillyourself.org. But when you go on their website, rather than like 7 easy, painless ways to kill yourself, it's 3 words, you're not alone. And there's information, there's a phone number to call. Rather than searching for destruction, they find hope. When they win the hackathon, amazing. Fast forward a year on that story, and one of the ladies on the team, she's like, last night I was out for coffee with my friend, and I started describing the website to her, and the friend interrupts her. She grabs her arm, she goes, what is the domain of that website? And she goes, howtokillyourself.org. Just wept. The night before, she went online to figure out how to kill herself. And she said, I landed on that website and that site saved my life. I'm looking around going, did anyone know we can build a website that can literally save people's lives? We had a advantage around technology is that we understand how it can change and influence people. And the choice is, will I let it consume me and lead down a path of destruction? Or will I see it as a tool that I can use in order to change the lives of my friends? The Bible says, throw off everything that hinders, that doesn't help you run with Jesus. That doesn't make you more like Jesus. Everything's drawing for our attention, consuming our time, consuming our energy. So when I go online, the question is, does that make me more like Jesus? Does going on Facebook make me more like Jesus? The narrow road leads to life, and it's worth it. The Christian life is worth it when you make those sacrifices. Despite the destruction that is around us or in us, there's innovation in the midst of that. There's opportunity in the midst of that. What path do I want to follow? The goal of life is joy and beauty and understanding your purpose and why you exist and giving back to life and carrying a load and doing something with the life you've been given. That's foundationally what I'm called to do in this life, is listen to where God calls me, and am I faithful to Him? And can I serve Him and serve others?
You can guess maybe why I showed that video clip this morning. Part of that reason is it's a modern day disciple. It's James saying, I want to walk the way Jesus walks. And I'm going to go find those places that I believe Jesus is calling me into. And when he followed that calling, lives have been saved. That's hope in Jesus. That's a present-day miracle, in my opinion. I also like it because James is very much not like I am. I know nothing about tech. And to think that James, who is strong and gifted in technology, is using that which he understands to lead others to walk in the ways of Jesus. All of us have been given gifts and interests and talents. We all can walk like Jesus in the way that he equipped us. And I invite us this morning to ponder, to go to Jesus, and to say, where are you calling me to walk like you? How are you calling me to walk like you? And then walk with joy-filled anticipation that being covered in the dust of your rabbi is a wonderful, wonderful experience. Let's pray together. Jesus, thank you that you invite us to be your disciples. Thank you that when you beckoned us with come, follow me, that you were inviting us onto a journey of knowing life in its fullness. Of course, you take us to places where it's a challenge, where we see suffering. But in those places, you welcome your healing to come through us, your joy to come through us. You invite us to be disciples of hope into the places where there is hopelessness. Jesus, often on a Sunday morning, we sing the lyrics, break my heart, for what breaks yours? It is a bold line for us to sing, and it is a bold line for us to pray. But may we, as your disciples, move closer to being able to pray, break my heart, for what breaks yours? And may we choose to walk his way. Amen.